hate that I have to do that extra step to make sure you're all just shut up. Whole lot of clicking. Oh wait, did I not unmute her? Oh no. No, you're all unmuted. God, I hope that's how that works. Welcome to the party, everybody. Happy Friday.
Oh,
bunch of extra work I had to do for you animals.
Why do you still have the music playing?
No, that music's still going.
Because I like the music. I'm enjoying this song very much. I had never... This is the Proto Men breaking out, because this is what Jeff likes, and I do whatever Jeff likes.
That's not at all the Proto Men. That's not at all breaking out.
It's not?
It's okay.
Oh, it's not. That's... it's
you
not!
Fucked
Why
up.
Didn't it play it?
You goddamn... Okay.
It's fine. You had one job. You didn't do it. But now that job is done. So expectations are set really, really low now.
Every time.
As always.
Every time I come in here and I say, I have everything set up. Nothing can fuck up. This is going to be awesome. Well, if anybody was curious, that was a band called Saint Motel. It was a song called Dear Dictator. What I wanted to...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
I actually
cool.
like
See
that
next month. So yeah.
I wondered why it was different when it was like hovering over on Spotify. I'm like, what the fuck? Why is Danny said it's this? I looked up that because that's a cool song, but he said it was the Proto Men. But how'd I mess this up? I thought.
Oh, we got a new follower, and the alert is not where I want it to be, so I can't see what the follower's name is. Son of a bitch. Here, put that down there.
Good job, there, Danny.
Thank you.
Good job.
Is everybody I know what it was. I thought it had fixed itself. I went to go play the song and it said not available right now, and I hate when Spotify does that. But then a song started playing. I thought it was just like a blip. That's the same song though. That's not Proto Med. I am clicking on Breaking Out by Proto Men, and it's not playing that song. It's playing something completely different. So really, it's not my fault. It's fine. Welcome to the show. It's Friday. My name is
I'm pretty sure it's still your fault.
Let's just keep going. It's another beautiful Friday, and we have the Proto Men are named after the Mega Man character. Oh, how neat. What kind of what genre is the song I was supposed to have played, Jeff?
They're like old school 80s 90s rock band, but yeah, themed after the Mega Man character, so a lot of the stuff is in universe, which is awesome. Though they do have a bunch of cover songs as well.
Well, at least for me it was a good time because I found a new song I like that I would have never heard otherwise. But other than that,
I have no idea what you played, but it was a nice song.
It's complete and utter failure. We are back at it again, of course. Jake Dev. Today I learned, not ladder. Thank you for following. I have that all fixed now. We have also Brandon, and Lakeith is joining us today. Welcome, Lakeith. Always a pleasant day when you're joining us most of the time. My name, of course, is Danny, but it is not about any of us. It is about our guest. And I love, for multiple reasons, I love when I get to interview Jeff or have Jeff on or talk to Jeff or sit in the back of a bus for 2 hours with Jeff or just any of the above. Because he's so loquacious and effervescent and just lovely slice of humanity that I don't really have to do anything while he's on, because he just talks. He talks and he's engaging, and then other guy people engage with him, and I just kind of sit here and just hang out and chat and occasionally check in while I'm listening to Jeff. Jeff, hi, Rogue Valley.
Hi.
What's Rogue Valley, man? What are you doing now? It's something new, right?
I mean, I've been Rogue Valleying for a while. So amusingly, the area I live in is the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon. So it's about as generic information security companies you can get, because the whole company name is Rogue Valley Information Security. Somewhat similar to, South Dakota, Worst Dakota, whichever one it is, Black Hills Information Security is like region name information security. And I was like, yeah, that works.
Well, sounds cool. If you have a badass region like that,
I don't know.
I mean, like, I'm not going to hire anybody that's like, Camden, New Jersey, info security.
Northwest have Ohio.
Quite, yeah, like.
Anywhere Ohio information security?
Hey, you're right.
Columbus Valley Information Security.
If you don't have it in the name of the company, then it's fine.
Yeah. Right. Well, no, thank you for coming on, man. And again, I'm really looking forward to not having to really do anything this week. So we always want people that we like. We like to have friends on, and we like when they talk about interesting and fun shit. Jeff, for the longest time, we've talked to him over a lot of times about, you know, lab building and things like that. But now we're going to be talking about, once you built that lab, how did you technical debt yourself into the lab not working anymore? So we're going to be talking about destroying technical debt. Whether it be in your own lab or your enterprise or fucking whatever.
I'm more on the production side of destroying technical debt. Like, always everything in lab first, because a lot of things, as an admin, if you're only going to do it once in production, it probably shouldn't be the first time and only time you're ever going to do it. That's why labs are amazing. So I don't know. Maybe shameless plug bit.ly/kickasslab. I don't know if links are going... Do links allegedly go through?
We'll let you through. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate that. So I whole other presentation on building a lab environment, because that's a useful thing for so many areas in life. And if I'm going to mention that, I may as well mention kind of my current favorite for Active Directory stuff, Game of Active Directory, or GOAD, which helps you set up in whatever environment you have, VMware or VirtualBox or Proxmox or online, three different domains and two different forests, and a bunch of intentional vulnerabilities in there as well.
Definitely put that in your production environment.
Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead and put that in prod, see what happens. No, that's for lab. And the security of lab should be entirely separate from production, and therefore... That shouldn't matter, and it's all about getting those reps and learning.
So are you more into, do you prefer automation? Like, for my stuff, I love to use Ansible, Terraform, and stuff like that. So that way I could easily just, you know, change any small detail on my infrastructure, and then boom, push it out and don't have to deal with it.
If you're going to be doing it a lot of times, then yes. So things like Game of Active Directory itself have a lot of Ansible along with a lot of scripting. That said, I do a fair bit of automation from ISO to final VM on the SAN side of things, like Packer. And you could do Packer to start from ISO and then do Salt or Ansible from there. I confess it's mostly PowerShell on the Windows side and Bash on the Linux side. The troubleshooting is easier, and a lot of the benefits of Ansible are if you're trying to configure different operating systems for the same idea, install a latest version of Apache or Nginx or whatever and have the same meta package name. If I'm always going to be doing the same OS, it doesn't benefit me nearly as much. So part of it's being curmudgeonly, and I don't want to learn a new thing when the old thing will do. But also, as an admin, I rail against complexity. If the simple thing will do, stick with the simple thing until you have enough of a problem that it's worth the complexity of another layer of complexity, right? There's one of the old truisms of computer science. All problems can be solved by one more layer of abstraction, comma, except for the problem of too many layers of abstraction.
No, I get that. It's just, you know, there's times where you have your infrastructure... You accidentally delete it, and then you have to rebuild it in a quick fashion, and it's just like,
That's kind of like parallel SSH. Hey, sweet, I can solve problems en masse, but I also I can cause problems en masse like nowhere else before. I think Dave lets you screw up way fast. Go ahead, Jake.
Dave is speaking from experience about 6 weeks ago now at this point. Is that right?
Probably. That sounds about right. Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I accidentally deleted my whole environment in my
house. That wasn't 6 weeks ago. That was like 2 weeks ago at best.
No, it was about 6 weeks ago. Because I have a kill switch and I forgot to hit the button. No, I did hit I believe I hit the button, but the batteries in the device died.
It was a malfunctioning kill switch.
Yeah. Make sure you change the batteries in your kill switch, by the way. That's a lesson.
Maybe make sure you don't have a everything is okay alarm. Like, if there is a button that is press this every 30 seconds to keep my lab alive, maybe reconsider having that button before worrying about replacing the batteries in that button.
Nah, it's every week. I just have to hit every week.
Labs should not have dead man switches.
No, it wasn't my lab. It was my whole house.
Oh, I mean, the more production it gets, the further away you should get from having the big red button of destroy it all with fire.
Yeah, that's one way to destroy tech debt, is just to burn it to the ground, right?
Yeah, we built a lot of stuff and fixed a lot of things.
I mean, this gets into when you have crises at work, there's the phrase never waste a crisis, where you can move incredibly fast when the organization is down. You can move incredibly fast when leadership is aware that things are broken or things are in a bad place. One of the things I had for today was upgrading domain controllers and FSR to DFSR, like the file migration, sorry, the file synchronization between domain controllers. And last time I did some incident response of like, hey, let's roll out some new domain controllers. I think it was server 2016 or 2019 that dropped support for FSR. So like, oh, before we introduce new domain controllers, we're going to have to migrate this. Anyway, let's do this. And 15 minutes later, okay, we're migrated. Now let's move. Like, it's amazing if it's literally just what is the sequence of commands and verification, how fast the company can move. Granted, that was a smaller organization, about 100 employees or so. But it's down to what is the sequence of commands that we need, and are we supported all the way through? Can we roll back? Do we have backups? In this case, they're recovering from ransomware, and the domain is down on a Sunday. Mm. Like, you can make some really fast changes. I'm sure it's come up on this call, on these calls of double tapping curb TGT. There's a hell of a lot more to protecting against an advanced adversary has had access to domain admin than just double tap curb TGT. And now you don't have to worry about golden tickets. There's a hell of a lot more, but it did feel rather satisfying to net user curb TGT, any password enter again, and you've just double tapped it. Because curb TGT is the one weird account that it ignores the password you specify and randomizes the password. So you can set the same password, except we have joining us in chat today, the one person who has encountered the exception to the rule in reality, as far as I'm concerned, Andy Robbins, who mentioned this was not true in Windows NT Server. Oh, I thought it was 2000? Oh, okay, so it's 2000. Yeah, if you set a password directly for curb TGT, it would actually be set to that password. If you, turns out, by a bit of a coincidence, there is a service principal name set for curb TGT. Therefore, it is Kerberosable. And if you can crack curb TGT password, then golden tickets are available to anyone with any domain account. You could Kerberost, crack, and like, hey, look, the password is also curb TGT or password or whatever. That is a bad situation. That is, any domain user can become any domain user, a la, was it MS-14068? Correct me if I'm wrong, the patch in domain controllers that allowed users to forge tickets, and any user can become any domain user. Yep, curbtgt/changepw. Yep, the exact SPN that is set, no matter the domain.
Well, yeah, said. We when we were first transitioning some of our tooling, we kept having that pop up as a duplicate domain or a duplicate spin in multi-domain forest.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because like, it's set per domain.
It's the same thing on all of them. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Because curb TGT is per domain. The literal built-in administrator is one per forest. No?
RID 500.
Yes, I think.
No, per domain.
Is it per domain? Oh, yeah, because you'd be joining. I guess that makes sense. All right.
Yep.
Okay, so let's get into actual topic. We briefly mentioned FSR to DFSR. Go ahead.
Jeff is, oh, Jeff, yeah, like, is
I'm trying to keep
going
us on
with
track.
Topics, and we are just like,
I have
we're just gonna be angry at each other all hour.
Oops. Are you saying F it, we'll do it live?
Always.
Is that the company motto?
Show like prepping us for plebs.
Episodes, right?
Yeah. All right. So imagine this scenario. You have some old domain controllers, and they were set up before you started as an admin, and you want to get on latest and greatest, but you don't know what things other than domain controller your current domain controllers are doing. So first, let me just start off with Active Directory Domain Services is just one Windows Server role, just like Active Directory Certificate Services is a role, or IIS is a role, or File Server is a role. you can remove that role and still have it be a member server, or demote it from domain controller. It can still technically have the role installed and not be in domain controller. So let's talk about, like, let's get to easy mode. Let's get out of these old crappy servers are being domain controllers, and instead they are being member servers that have whatever old services that they have. It's nice when domain controllers are just domain controllers, but that's a going forward problem. Let's talk about killing technical debt. Let's talk about the migration process. You can join any new Windows server to any existing domain. I haven't checked that you can join Server 2025 technical preview to Windows Server NT, but you can, right? You can join those new domain controllers to be domain controllers to the existing domain. They're just member servers, as in domain joined servers. Start with the latest and greatest you have the licensing for. Ideally, Windows Server 2022. Yes, we're going to have 2025 in spoilers, end of 2024, because they like to name things ahead of time, but that's a whole different can of worms. Anyway, let's talk about the overall process of migration. And feel free to chime in or tell me I'm wrong as we go. Like, I'm here for the discussion just as much as I'm here for laying out a plan. Like, what's licensing? All right. So, add a new domain controller. A new Windows Server 2022 machine has joined to the domain. It's just a Windows server, right? You can install Active Directory Domain Services, the role, and it's still just a member server. Afterwards, it'll ask, hey, would you like to promote this to a domain controller? Yes. Promote it to a domain controller with whatever IP it has currently. It'll be just one more domain controller. It'll replicate. It'll take a little bit of time for it to replicate. If you're talking about fast links, we're talking about minutes to hours, not days or weeks. If you have really slow links, you have other problems, and there's things like NGDS util and reinstall from media sets, but that's not a problem that most mere mortals have to worry about, right? Mostly that's a tool for pen testers and red teamers and proper villains to make copies of domain controllers so they can crack hashes and all that fun. All right, so you added a new domain controller. You've promoted it as a domain controller. There's a whole sequence of commands to make sure replication is fine. I'll gloss over that for now, but if anybody wants to share some links, we're fine with that. Next is, it's a functioning domain controller. It has its own static IP, even though you're probably not going to be the existing IP of old domain controllers. You're going to pick a new static IP. Change DHCP over to it. That'll help your DHCP joined systems move to it, and it's going to be tested for a while. But you're going to have the problem. This is a problem a lot of people encounter in non-lab environments. You have old crappy machines that are hard-coded DNS to the old domain controllers. So how do we solve this problem? I'm going to make one underlying assumption that you don't have old crappy machines that have DNS servers hard-coded to one DNS server of one domain controller. If you have that problem, I'm sorry, by my outline, you'll find out in production.
That's the one of the most menacing things I've ever heard. You'll find out in production.
I mean, you can work around this for a while by moving DHCP, and then, as I've mentioned before we started, run something like Wireshark or T-Shark on the domain controller, look for inbound DNS requests from non-domain controllers, and see who is still hard-coded by source IP, then find out how to admin those machines. You'll probably end up adding to your asset inventory by doing so.
You forgot this.
What was that word? Asset. Pronouncing very carefully so that Danny doesn't go off on a rail or some other permutation of that word.
Wait, what about me now? Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. What's that? What happened?
Yeah, sorry, I said asset. It's okay.
No,
asset
it's
rails. Don't worry. Danny, are you familiar with the
asset rails?
It's not like you told me to unalive myself like Dev did before we got on. You're fine.
That's what he told me.
Yeah, I told that to Jake.
Oh, well, in that case, it's fine.
It's fine. Way to be play the victim there, Danny.
Next, you're going to assume we're doing least privilege. I mean, Andy, come on. Yeah. I'm assuming, like, I feel like most admins, if they're going to hard code DNS, are like, no, I'm going to plug in two IP addresses because there's two spots there. If you only had one domain controller, you have other problems. And you should proceed a bit more carefully. For the record, it took me a long time to become okay with this, but I am totally fine with upgrading Windows servers of domain controllers of 2016 and above. I am not okay with anything before that. Why 2016 specifically? Because that's when they moved to the kernel versions tied to the Windows Server versions, just like when it's been that way since XP 64-bit Service Pack 3, or Service Pack 1 on the 64-bit side, to be particular. Anyway, but upgrading on the prior builds was an ugly, ugly process. Server 2016 and above, though, it's the same as doing a new build update, like Windows 10 1607 to Windows 10 1701. It's much less big a deal. It's like a slightly bigger Windows update. And yeah, you can add more.
Are you in the ball, are you in the camp of having a domain controller per user?
One domain controller per user? No. Gosh, okay. What is the Microsoft documentation is one per Windows domain controller role. Like minimum two, three is nice for bigger orgs. If your problem is the actual load on domain controllers, you have a team of domain controller admins at that point, because there are bigger problems. A single domain controller from a load perspective can do 50,000 users just fine. From an actual like CPU and memory and disk resources load perspective. So it's not for redundancy in terms of the load and spreading the load, like load balancing. It's just for the sake of, can I reboot how many machines at a time?
Right, so, or different across different sites.
Two per site is nice. If you have enough cross site bandwidth to fail over across sites and have the secondary and tertiary DNS servers be set across site, that's totally fine too.
Right. I think a lot of the old guidance is based off of like back when networks were not nearly as fast as they are today, where you're thinking these slow links actually meant like slow instead of like sub instantaneous networking.
If you have like 100 megabit site to site links, you're fine. Stop worrying. If you're constantly saturating your bandwidth, then again, you have other problems. I'm less concerned there. But yeah, two or three if you're larger. If you have crap tons of domains, your next problem is to consolidate down domains. But that's a topic for a different rant and a different time. Ooh,
that's a big one, yeah.
Yeah, I have had literal finding on Pentest report of effectively nobody at your organization can name all of your domains, and that's a finding. Because you can't secure what you can't understand. So your next major project needs to be consolidating down to something you can understand. I hear there's a software as a service product called Trimark Vision that can help you with understanding the administration cross-domain, cross-forest. And that's all well and good. But also, create an environment that someone dumber than you can administer. Because if you're at the end of your possibility administering and upgrading, et cetera, then make it easier for future you, make it easier for your replacement. Yeah. If you can't understand the trust mapping, if Bloodhound can visualize the trust mapping and that's something useful to your organization, like it is almost always an appendix in my Pentest report of here's a visualization of the cross-domain, cross-forest trusts because nobody at your organization knows them. And it's not every domain to every domain. It's transitive cross-forest trust here, cross-domain trusts here, et cetera. Yeah. It was kind of awesome, though, my first, like, Fortune 100 company pen test. Like, hey, I'm domain admin. Now let me look around, and oh, God, there are, like, 27 domains.
Hey, I'm domain admin, and I'm allowed to be.
Yeah. I mean, we have other things to talk about, I swear, but we're going on tangent after tangent, so let me...
That's what we do.
Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Let me just emphasize, I'm sure it's been said here 1,000 times before, the security boundary is not the domain. The security boundary is the forest. Active Directory domains are replication boundaries. Administrative... No, I shouldn't even say administrative. They are technical boundaries that domain controllers in the same domain or in different domains care about. They are not security boundaries. If an attacker is domain admin, consider that forest compromised. If there are cross-forest trusts, then in practice, it's almost always extremely easy to jump from forest to forest too, because domain admin A in forest A is also a member of IT admins in Forest B and can quickly become domain admin, enterprise admin in Forest B just as well.
I'm sorry.
Some would argue that Forest isn't even a security boundary. Sometimes the Forest isn't a security boundary. And sometimes Microsoft will come back, Microsoft MSRC will come back after several weeks and say, upon further examination, we believe that the attack you've described is the protocol working as expected is not a real security boundary.
Sorry, this is
one
of the most...
That's what MSRC is. It's actually been replaced by just a bot that waits for 2 weeks and then replies back. This is the protocol working as designed.
This might be one of my favorite comments ever in chat from another medic. He's like, we've called maps like that trust or fucks.
I like that.
That's why I'm going to remember that one for a while.
I'm the reason you're active at Trias. Oh, man, chat's blown up. I like it.
Yeah, you're very popular. You're very, yeah.
I tried to draw people over.
You're a big
I was thinking about doing the Friday defenses with Liba Charlie and then like, hey, everyone, now glom on to us for a time mark. But yeah, I love these weekly calls, the Wednesday offensive, the Thursday defensive, the Friday other defensive, the Trimark happy hour.
RS has the best name.
You're welcome.
Happiest name, that's for sure.
Configuration naming, Andy, I'm going to need more words for that because what? So the normal way to attack from child domain to the parent domain, I'll say this while Andy is writing this up, is SID history. If I can convince domain controller A in child domain A that, hey, by the way, I used to be enterprise admin in the forest, and then you can present that ticket to the forest domain controller, and it says, oh, I see you used to be a domain admin here. Congratulations, you are a domain admin. That is the easiest way to do it, let alone all of the cross-domain group memberships that we almost always end up encountering anyway. So in practice, forest to forest isn't usually a security boundary, and domain in the same forest is essentially never a security boundary.
So how do we unravel that? Let's keep it simple and just say that we've got
move to one domain, one forest.
What's the first step then? Just shut it down, delete the trust.
No, so what I hate as an admin is when you add a new security add a new technology, add a new area, and then never finish the migration, so you actually end up with N+1 problems, much like the good old XKCD on competing standards, right? Hey, there are way too many USB standards, so let's add one more. Now there are 7 competing standards. So have a timeline. I'm fine with if you want to add one new forest with one new domain, add the cross-domain trust, and start the migration process. Start with the smallest one you can, add the cross-domain trusts, absorb the file servers, have DFS sync, and then plan to either rejoin clients to the new domain and migrate, making those new users in that. Like, it's going to be a bit of a pain per client, but you can solve so many problems when you're also rebuilding clients in a given environment, and it's just lovely. You can have file servers that are active for both domains simultaneously, just by DFS syncs. So you could have clients in the existing forest, existing domain, point to their file server and have that replicate to the new side. So when they change over, hey, look, it's the same file shares that I'm used to. It's the same member servers, the same services. Software inventory helps you out so much here because you can find the smallest subset of users that use the smallest subset of unique applications with the smallest subset of services and servers that they need, migrate those, and then move those clients to the new domain side.
Yep. So you're talking about like a greenfield. So build a greenfield rather than picking Forest A versus Forest B, build Forest C, build it right, and then migrate to C?
If you have an existing forest that is salvageable, then I'm okay with moving to an existing one. I try not to get too prescriptive about how to get there so much as keep making progress towards simplifying and understanding. So I am totally fine with Greenfield if the existing stuff is just that bad. I'm also okay with this forest over here is salvageable. This is the most recent, and the admins are more okay with updating to new Windows server builds, etc. So let's go with that. I'm okay either way. The point is consolidate down if you have more than one forest. Like Azure Active Directory domain services is different than Azure AD, is different than Entra ID. But the one thing I like about it is effectively they have shaved off the rough edges of Active Directory domain services. You only get one forest. You only get one domain. You are not allowed to set up cross-domain trusts, cross-forest trusts. Effectively, you don't get domain admin. You just get OU admin or the equivalent. That's not a real group, but many people add it. I like that idea that you should be moving towards of, no, there are no cross-domain trusts. There are no cross-forest trusts. There is just the one domain to rule them all, etc.
I guess we should say yet, right?
Excuse me. No. I am not meaning to say Entra because it is still called Azure Active Directory Domain Services as if an alternative to Entra ID.
If I get one more person, because I'm also in charge of marketing, if I get one more person that corrects me when I make a social post, I'm going to start hunting people.
I think it was last week that I just
I gotta start following Danny's social posts now.
Pedantic shit.
I just updated all the 560 slides that said Azure AD to Entra ID everywhere, and it hurt me a bit. Not gonna lie.
I mean, even if you go in the red portal, half the place it says, it's like all mixed.
It's also, it's hilarious. Like, there's the Azure AD Connect tool, which for the longest time to push to Entra ID after it was rebranded, use the Azure AD Connect tool. And now they've actually renamed that tool officially, and it's the Entra ID Connect tool, whose file name is aadconnect.msi.
Yeah. Rat bastards.
I think it's technically Entra Connect, not even Entra ID Connect. Mm-hmm. It's Entra Connect. Right?
Because if we're going to rename things, we may as well introduce technically two different names for the same existing product. And we all know it's going to be Microsoft Defender for Entra ID Connect. Soon.
I'm just going to start abbreviating it to say Microsoft bullshit cloud stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, how is it going to charge you double the price?
MSBSCS. Microsoft bullshit cloud stuff.
Danny, to charge double the price, you have to have two names. That way you can charge for each name.
That's like seven names in one thing. I'm making them money.
So you're getting a deal. You only pay double the amount.
It is technically correct to call it Azure AD because you only get Entra ID if you pay for E5 licensing.
Oh, we had an E5 discussion the other day, and I lost all shit when they started two words in. I'm like, I don't get it. I'm not even talking about that. We were talking about certain other things, and somebody brought up the E5 shit, and I was like, you know what? I'm glad I don't do this for a living. I'm glad I just make memes for my company.
All right, let's just get started. No, we're not going to restart, but just so I say it all in one like 5-minute blurb, let me spiel about getting to latest Windows Server domain controllers on whatever existing domain you have. So let's say you have two existing Windows Server 2003 domain controllers. I'm sorry. You're probably going to have to take an intermediate step for the FSR to DFSR. But I have a client that, like I was talking with last week, that still has a Windows Server 2003 domain controller and still on, therefore, domain enforced functional level 2003 R2. So, add new Windows Server. Promote to domain controller. It has a static IP. Then demote one of the existing. Change one of the existing's IPs to some new IP. Subsume that IP. Let me use A, B, and C. You have existing domain controllers A, B, and C. Sorry, existing domain controllers A and B. You add new Windows Server C. Steal B's IP address into C. Now all of the existing requests to that hard-coded IP, you will have some. They go to C just fine. Repeat. Essentially, demote B. It's no longer domain controller. It will still be a member server. You probably have some old shitty services still on it. Whatever. That's a problem for next time. This is just solving the old shitty domain controllers problem. Add new domain controller D. Promote it to domain controller. Swap out A's IP address to any new IP address. Take domain controller D. Give it A's IP address. Now all of your old shitty servers that have hard-coded IP addresses for DNS point to the two new domain controllers. Now, demote original domain controller A, and now you have swapped out, and now you can do the domain enforced functional level upgrades. There will be a new one for the first time in a very long time with Windows Server 2025, but that's not coming out yet. So all of this would be bringing you to... it wasn't just me trying to diagram it. Yeah, there's the whole other things of like, yeah, removing services like print server, they should be disabled on domain controllers. That's a bigger problem with that is a problem for coercion. That is a much bigger problem if you enable NTLM v1, but you'll solve that problem by moving to the Windows Server 2025. I have a whole separate discussion on protected users group and how awesome it is. And you should at least move towards all of your domain admins are a member of protected users. It is the ideal kind of change to make because it only affects IT. I would love for you to make your way towards all users that are admins anywhere, according to Bloodhound, are also a member of protected users. That would be awesome, but that is the platonic ideal and not something you're going to make your way towards immediately. But it is something you can test because adding each new admin, and if things break, roll them back and figure out what broke. It's just a group membership. It's a log off and back on. It is the ideal type of test to make.
Yep. The only problem with it is that you've got administrators that are the ones that have to eat their own food before they give it out. And so they don't want to eat that. They don't. It's going to break what? No. I can't log into vCenter? No.
Yeah, but my user account is used to log into, it's what this Windows SQL Server is set to start as, and therefore, since it has set up for unconstrained delegation, protected users won't allow that. Like, that is a problem that you should solve.
You say, we'll solve it later.
You're hurting me.
Sorry, this is Jake's thing. Go, Jake.
Jeff, we really need to talk after this. We really need to talk.
I feel like in my heart of hearts, I'm an admin who went into the attack world because it's easier to consult that way. But like, if I wasn't doing my own pen testery thing, I'd be over at Trimark in a heartbeat.
I have four talks already scheduled on talking about how to move users into the protected users group safely. So yeah.
Yes, I'll be first in line at those talks if I'm at the same conference. All right.
Good deal.
All right, so that we did the spiel. So I had the second of four things to talk about is upgrading file servers. Good news, the storage migration service is so freaking awesome. Storage migration service is, Danny. Storage migration service is point this service at old domain controller, at old file server and new file server, and it will take over the soul of the old file server after replicating. It's essentially, for the Linux folk, it's rsync, and then it swaps into the old IP and the new old host name. So clients don't know that they're talking to a new file server. You just have a cutover point and as many arbitrary syncs as you want beforehand. You can also subsume multiple file servers into one this way, which is awesome. Hey, I'm a moderator now. I have powers.
Ooh, shit.
I was supposed to be a secret. Everybody's going to want it now.
I know. The two things you'll probably have to do. I just switched to mod view. Anyway, the two things you'll probably have to do.
Yeah, I don't know what it does.
Is
I just did
your
it.
Windows servers will Windows file servers will probably need to have SMB v1 re-enabled. I want you to solve this problem, but it's not a problem you can solve immediately. You will probably have to solve this problem on file servers over time, and I don't want it to slow you down from upgrading the file servers themselves. Windows clients can probably have SMB v1 disabled. In fact, they do by default for new installs past Windows 10, 16.07 and above or so. Andy probably knows it offhand. If they don't use SMB v1 in the first N days after install, I forget N, and I forget the exact Windows Server build. Anyway, the other problem you're going to have is you have Windows clients accessing a file server by the improper name if you also change like the naming scheme over time. And there is another link I've shared for essentially a registry key that you set on the Windows Server side that says, hey, I accept you calling me server name file1, even though my actual name is like Trimark FS01V. as a complete aside, since we're ranting about all the things, naming schemes are a useful thing. I like encoding the site name, the service. Site name, building name, if you have multiple buildings in the same site, purpose of the server, start at 01 and move your way up. You never reuse numbers. You only count up. And then I like to have a suffix of P or V for virtual or physical. So you know if you're looking for a physical box or a virtual one, but you do you. All right. Complete aside, unless you want to rant about file or server names for a moment here.
That's not that kind of show. My question of you is why are we focused so much on the operating system and not the protocols when we're talking about upgrading a DC or a file server?
So you get new capabilities that you so for the most part, Windows 10 can be about as secure as Windows 11. They've turned more things on by default, but defaults matter. But on the newer OS side, file servers get new versions of SMB. You have, I don't know, like Quick for SMB, UDP, Azure File Sync. You get a lot of new capabilities added for free. Let's be honest, the newer the OS is, the more supported it is by most of your architecture. It's also probably a good excuse because a lot of your more critical servers, your PKI servers, your file servers, your WSUS servers, your SQL servers, your DHCP servers, those are probably the ones you don't touch very often. So I'd like to give you the excuse of update to the server because you also figure out how was this put together and you've now gained a few more reps first in your lab environment, then in production of how to actually go about the process. I'm trying to identify the biggest gotchas along the way, like re-enabling SMB v1 because you probably have some old shitty Windows Server 2003 file server that some domain uses.
The multifunction printers.
Yeah, your crappy MFPs that scan to a file share is the most common reason that you're going to have to re-enable SMB v1. That's the exact reason for the one in incident response for did a bunch of upgrades.
I can show you where I got that scar. So I still have the scar from that.
One of my favorite sayings is corporate policy is corporate scar tissue.
We've all been there. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good. So last question on OS stuff. We're talking a lot about replacing OSs instead of upgrading OSs. So a reason that you don't recommend upgrading an OS, like let's say you've got one of those servers who you literally don't know what's installed on it and you are so afraid to break stuff. Can I do an in-place upgrade?
Windows Server 2016 and above, I object much less strenuously than I did prior. I would hold the line prior because you're just kicking the can down the road. Of now, it's even more of a special snowflake that nobody understands inside the environment. It was upgraded from Windows Server 2000 to 2003, 2008, 2012, 2016, 2019. Let's be honest, it probably never got to 2019 anyway. But at that point, nobody understands it, and you're going to have to bite the bullet of understanding it at some point. For lab environments, like if you trust your admins, they should be able to take a backup of it, restore to lab environment and test the process. If it has some critical service that Windows clients rely upon that point to it, then bring over a Windows client build as well. Bring a couple domain controllers, and now your lab is a literal clone of production, and go through the process ahead of time. So I am quite happy to test ahead of time, but I hold the line at no, it needs to be a new Windows OS, because then you'll have bitten the bullet and understand what's on it.
Yep.
Otherwise, we all have those boxes where there's server uptime. Like, one of my favorite things to do as a pen tester is sort by OS install date. And that's my hit list of machines that nobody understands, they're not well managed, etc. It should be your hit list as an admin as well, of understand these. Everything that is install date of before I started at the company is next on my list to understand and replace.
Yep. And that's also how you find the Unix administrators that are administrating your Windows boxes.
Ooh.
There. I'll do a small aside. One of my favorite things is cheat codes to find the unmanaged machines. So how do you find the non-domain joined boxes? Because if I could draw right now, I'll draw a Venn diagram. Here's a circle. of the well-managed machines in your environment. And now let me draw the same circle and let me instead label it as the domain-joined Windows machines in your environment. It's the same circle. So how do you find the non-domain-joined, non-Windows machines, or either of those two? On your border firewalls, search for outbound NTP traffic. Those are usually sourced from your non-Windows, probably not managed machines. Your Ubuntus, your Debians, your Fedoras, your Red Hats, etc. do time sync. And they're going to do like pool.ubuntu.com or whatever they use for NTP. Sweet. Now you found a source IP that you can go hunt and destroy. On a similar side, I like using WPAD on the Windows side. So web proxy auto discovery, great for responder, great for attackers. You probably don't use it for pushing your proxy settings around your environment, but it is enabled by default. So you can add, some people like, well, just disable WPAD. Well, yes, disable WPAD via group policy, via Intune, via SCCM, via whatever. But also add a DNS entry for it. And all of the clients requesting WPAD.yourDNS suffix or failing over to just broadcasting, hey, who's WPAD? Those are your unmanaged or the boxes that are ignoring group policy. And in either case, that is a very interesting set of machines. Seek and destroy.
Nice.
Oh. I'm sure you all had your fixes over time for finding those unmanaged weird machines. But yeah, it's a nice way to find where the cruft is inside your environment.
Unplug cables and see who screams. That's always my favorite.
I mean, scream tests work, but you burn political capital to do so. And at some points in your career, you're going to have political capital to spare. Recovering from active incident, you can make some very quick changes and scream test just fine. Because everything is down, and the faster we recover, the less likely we have to pay the ransom. Totally fine. But you're probably not overflown in political capital for most of your career. Therefore, you got to play nicely. Wild card for WPAD? Yeah. Blue Tuxedo? Yeah, Blue Tuxedo is awesome. Go ahead.
I just said thanks, buddy. That's all.
Yeah, okay. Probably enough on file servers. Oh, one last point. You probably have some old clients that somebody added, even IT added, I don't trust DNS, so I added /IP address of file server/share, and that's the shortcut on some user's desktop. So if you add a new file server, you subsume its name, but not its IP, some clients are going to be upset. It's fine to have a Windows server with multiple IP addresses. Not a huge deal. Just add the old IP address when you subsume over its old name as well. Like, you got to support production as production. The Linux kernel usually says, like, one of their founding philosophies is we never, ever, ever break user land. If we want to break user land, then we're doing it wrong. There ain't no production like production. If you can avoid breaking production by having two IP addresses, you're probably not running out of 10.0/8. So take two IP addresses. It's fine. All right. Other topics there? Because I have more to talk about.
We got
ADCS.
I would actually love to talk about ADCS. We have like 8 minutes left, but I want to save you for next time. I want more Jeff. And there is the principle of scarcity. We can't give Jeff to everybody for so long because then nobody will come back. So we want Jeff to come back to talk about ADCS and whatever he chooses to rant about.
But on next episode of Dragon Ball Z, I'll be talking about upgrading your print servers, your WSUS servers, your DHCP servers, adding WSUS database maintenance because Microsoft sucks at adding indexes, and as a bonus, Active Directory certificate services can be a net positive. Move everyone to Ubiquitous. It'll be great.
You're watching a different version of Dragon Ball Z than I am.
I was purposely quiet and let you say that so I could chop that later and overlay it on something. So
I mean, I'm probably more likely to watch that version, to be
honest. Jeff, we got
will Frieza be able to overpower Goku's SMB version 3.1? Will Steve Cyphus finally fall to the last NTLM V1 machine? Who will win, SMB V1 or Ned Pyle? Find out on the next episode of Trimark Happy Hour.
I can't wait to use that. That's awesome. All right, this is awesome. I can't wait to have you back up here, Jeff. Thank you so much for hanging out. What we normally like to do at the end of the show is discuss either we had a great week or a shitty week. It was something big that happened. Hey, two new followers. Luna and somebody else had followed. Oh my god, I had their name in my head 2 seconds ago. And yeah, dude. So you're a huge get.
It was absolutely the Dragon Ball Z.
You are gold. You're a huge get, and you should be charging other, not us, but charge other people to come on their shows.
Everybody else, yeah.
Oh man, we even have Bill Sepp. Hi, Bill.
Bill was our guest last week.
Yeah. I meant to join last week.
Did you have any particular wins this week, Jeff? How was your week? Did you have anything that really stuck out to you this week?
Past Jeff has already forgotten whatever I've done this week.
So that's fair enough.
I got my own calendar because I'm already this oblivious. Yeah, I had some fun wins. I had my favorite C2 is ssh.exe. For Windows clients, why would I use anything but ssh.exe to give me access to a target environment? Because if everything else fails, the thing that I most want about C2 is the internal network access, because on the average environment, I mean, you all have seen a lot more internal environments than I have, but the average internal IP can reach every internal IP. So if I lose everything else, outbound SSH starting automatically on some random user endpoint, if outbound SSH is allowed, I now have access to that environment as long as that machine exists.
Fantastic. I think
that was a fun one.
Yeah. We got a few more minutes left, so we could actually go around the room. Lakeith.
I got nothing, man. Just happy that we made it to spring break for the kids. So
that's a win.
That's my win. Like, I survived.
Do yours stay home? Do yours come home for a spring break? Or like,
Yeah.
Do yours come home for spring
break? we're gonna kick them out to my mother-in-law's house for a little bit, but
by come home, I mean stay home. Like, well, actually, I don't even know how old your kids are because I'm a bad friend.
It's fine.
No, I don't know. Come home, stay home, whatever.
I knew what you meant. That's really what counts.
Thank you, Lakeith. It's always Dave over there talking shit.
Fucking Dave.
Fucking Dave. Classic Dave. Brandon.
I just realized we're calling him Dave.
He told us to call him Dave. He's like, in this country, it's actually pronounced Dave. So, okay, well, actually, we're going to call you Dave.
Okay. All
right. No. I'm not.
Unfortunately, Dave's here, man.
I'm a little disappointed that nobody made fun of all of like the shit that I've got in my beard and in my hair.
It's because the show is about Jeff. It's not about you, Brandon.
I mean, I brought unicorns on my shirt. Nobody commented on that. I guess they. Yeah.
We don't make fun of each other's appearance here, Brandon. We are very respectful of your choices.
Wait, what show are you watching, Jake?
Yeah, we don't tell each other that we hope they're dead or anything.
Now's when you can like roll that footage every time they made fun of me for something. No, so I'm shaving my head.
What happens at conferences don't count, Brandon.
It's okay. I forgot about that. I'm shaving my head and my beard tomorrow. So this is like the last hurrah. The kids got to have fun and like put my hair in braids and put little ponytails and stuff. So
I like the one in the beard.
Thank you,
most.
Syntax.
I think it would be extra awesome. I would just go all in on it. Have it be a pink bow.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The tie is fun, but a little bow.
Like, I thought you were cosplaying a dwarf or something for some Lord of the Rings thing or something.
Yeah, I'm in cosplay right now.
He's LARPing after this call.
Guys, I got to end at 3. I got a LARP I got to get to.
All right, go. All right, Damien, why don't you go then?
I don't want to go. Bro. Jake, you go.
I don't know, stuff.
You're going on vacation?
Taking a week off. Taking a week off, and I'm not taking my laptop with me. I've been going back and forth, and I'm like, there's some code that I want to work on that's cool, that blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, no, fuck it. I'm going to be on a beach. I'm going to read a book, and I'm going to drink Bloody Marias. Sort of. You're right. I'm gonna look at the pictures.
All right.
But yeah, just looking forward to that. Dave, what you got?
Why'd you go so ahead? Tomorrow is B-Side Rock. If you're in the Rochester area, definitely go out there. We're also gonna be doing a challenge, Trimark challenge. That what the prizes are, that's for Danny to find out and figure out and let you guys know.
Yeah, we totally
there will be prizes that Danny said he's gonna be giving out and coins. So go ahead and sign up for the challenge.
I could.
Don't think I'll be able to make it.
I can give them a golden Dogecoin. That could be one thing we give them. Let's see what other stuff I got hanging around. Danny, here.
Is the prizes what's ever laid around in your office that you don't want?
How about the Cylon battleship from Battlestar Galactica? You think that'd be a great prize for us to give somebody?
Hey, wait a second. We're nearing the top of the hour, Danny. Tell us about your week.
Ooh.
As I'm the host, I don't have to, but I will. It's fine. You, and that's not a cop out. That's legitimately not a cop out. One of like, I've told this story a few different times, but like, it's hard for me to always remember like how or where I met somebody because I am privileged enough that like I got to go a lot of places very early in my career and I still do, and I meet a ton of people and I do a lot of different things with a lot of different cliques and people and things, so it's hard for me to kind of trace back, you know, for a lot of people where I met them. But it was Virginia Beach, it was Sans Net Wars, it was my first Sans that I've ever been to, and that's the first place I ever met Jeff. And I sat in the front row because, like, I honestly took part in Net Wars. Like, I didn't know shit. I was on a bigger team who knew more things, but I'd always wanted to do one. And Jeff was running it. And I shit you not, one of the most electric personalities, entertainers, just a natural holder of court. And I hold that in very high esteem. Because, like, I've done radio and I do these things and I love being on stage and things like that. So, you know, when game, for lack of a better term, game recognized game. So when I see somebody who is that good and that instantaneously catches your attention, I fucking fell in love with Jeff, like, right away. And I had such a good time, not just because the Net Wars is awesome, but because Jeff is just so cool to hang out with. So whenever I get a chance to hang out with Jeff, and like we had that really cool bus ride from Hackenfest a couple years ago. So I get, if I see you from across a large room at any given conference, like I feel my face light up because you're an amazing person and it makes me feel so much better about my day and about this, actually the state of things in industry and hackerdom, to know that somebody like you exists. So getting you on here to just shoot the shit and smile and laugh and just be your fucking magnanimous and magnificent self, that was the highlight of my week.
I know we're past the top of the hour, so first of all, thank you. That was like some of the kindest things anybody's ever said of or about me. But I'm going to be a jerk and immediately disagree with an aspect.
What?
You said Jeff is a natural at speaking, and I posted it in chat as well, but I think too many people say, oh, well, I'm not a good speaker and I can't ever be, so I'm not going to try. Like, presenting is a skill like pretty much any other skill. Your potential is higher than where you are now, no matter where you are now. And you can improve, and like anything, it improves with doing more reps. So it can start with a B-sides. It can start with present amongst your own company. It can start with present to a single coworker some idea, because my favorite thing about imposter syndrome, oh gosh, I'll have to, imposter, yeah, there you go. Imposter syndrome, link going into chat now. Everyone click so you can see the Venn diagram I'm referring to. People always think of imposter syndrome as what I know is a subset of everybody around me, and that is never true. The right side is always true. You know some things that everybody in your group does not, and other people in your group know things that you do not. So take it this way. You can learn something from anyone else. There is always something you can learn. And there is always something you can share to help that group learn. It's a much healthier way to think about imposter syndrome.
Hey, Jeff, just take your goddamn compliments. Like, just take the compliments.
you cut the show.
But that is an important distinction. That, like, you make it, I should have said, you make it seem natural. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I've had this conversation with a couple of these guys right here about how, even though I do all of that stuff too, I used to have a stutter that I couldn't get out the word hello. I couldn't have a conversation like this. And then I decided to go and take a chance and go into radio. And then I figured out, when I have a microphone in front of me, that shit doesn't happen. And then it built on top of that. And then I also, but I still take my cues from people like you. And I cause I watch styles and personalities, and I take a little bit from here and there, and I've taken quite a bit from you. But yes, I also had to grow into it. So important distinction, but also just shut up and take your compliment. That is the show for this week. We had the Love Fest that went 4 minutes over. That's fine. 4 minutes is good for a Love Fest. It's about how long Jake usually lasts. So next week, I believe we have who? Nathan McNulty, right? Is that who's coming on?
Yeah, we got week? Nathan. Yeah. But Jake, congratulations. 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
Been practicing.
Excellent.
Usually that's time for a cuddle afterwards.
Yeah, or like, and talk about your day and stuff like that, like how we do at the end of the show. So next week, Nathan, other than that, do we do this every
wins
Friday?
For the week.
What's that?
I said wins for the week.
Wins for the week, baby. I lasted 4.5. We do this every Friday. And if you want any of the old episodes, they're up on YouTube. We're also up on Spotify. If that's how you do get your information, you don't want to watch a video, you want to listen. If you're listening to this right now, thank you. I don't actually watch videos. I listen to audio, so I don't even eat my own dog food in that respect. But we have that. Jeff does a lot. He gets visit. Was it RogueValleyInfoSec.com? Right, Jeff, for you?
Yep.
Yeah, Rogue Valley InfoSec for Jeff. If you want to hire a trial,
it's a shitty website, but it has my email. It's Jeff at Rogue Valley InfoSec.
No, your website doesn't matter. It's you. You're the get. If you want Trimark, trimarksecurity.com/services. We do Active Directory. We do Microsoft Cloud bullshit. We do VMware Virtual Infrastructure. That's what I'm calling it. MSBSCS. Yeah, Microsoft bullshit cloud stuff. Entra, whatever. That's all up there, and all of our stuff, hubbo.trimarksecurity.com.